Battle of L.A., as we know, Bill mentioned, two craft were brought down and were captured, one by the Navy off Long Beach and the other by the Army Air Corps, or the Army, up in the mountains near Mount Wilson. Do you know later on, Bill, what happened to those? Did you find out that in any time in the future was the recovery ever talked about at Douglas or anywhere else you worked?
Well, actually, it was in the classified area at Naval Air Station San Diego.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, it was heavy.
Sure.
And so, essentially, this started what later became the Navy Solar Warden Program, where we now have 8 naval space battle groups out in the galaxy, operating 24 hours a day against bad guys out there. And so the Navy then took their vehicle, took it apart, and this means then that in 42, we actually had an extraterrestrial vehicle. And there was no personnel on board,
uh-huh.
But it was purposely given to us. Now, arrangements were made later on to investigate in detail this whole sighting. And the Nordics gave you 2 of these. The Army got 1 and the Navy got the other.
Are you saying that those 2 were given to us and they didn't crash?
They were...
Were they drone craft, unoccupied and remotely controlled?
Yeah, remotely controlled, and there was nobody on board.
Uh-huh.
And so, essentially, these were given to the U.S. Navy.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was given to the Army, or the Army Air Corps.
Right.
And so, the point I'm trying to make is that we had our hands on an extraterrestrial vehicle.
In 1942,
right.
1942. So, we may have had our hands on one before that, though. Cape Girardeau, I think, was prior to that.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm trying to say is, it doesn't seem that when we talk about extraterrestrial involvement, we think everything came much later. And the Navy brought every top research person in the country into studying their vehicle. And so the situation took place that my brother immediately went in the Navy. I then was selected to go in, and I went through boot camp in San Diego and went over to North Island, still in 42, only months after this Los Angeles sighting. So whatever happened to us before the vehicles came in,
mm-hmm.
when we saw early in the evening this bright light with a beam sticking out of it, and then the beam facing us, mm-hmm. and taking the whole pressure of the bright light, that's where essentially the title of my book comes from, which is Selected by Extraterrestrials. So what I'm trying to say is your Los Angeles event was an event which essentially caught a lot of other people, and then they became involved in extraterrestrial.
Hmm.
And so within just a 2.5 months, I'm in the Navy, and I'm operating as staff to Admiral Riccobana on this other program where we have all these Navy operatives in Germany. And they're bringing information back from Germany.
About,
now, these are not years later. This
no.
is just a couple of months later.
So,
do you see what I'm trying to say?
There's a of course, there's a connection there. Absolutely.
There's absolute connection.
Mm-hmm.
And you can call it anything you want. But 1, 2, 3, 4, bang. I mean, it's the way they operate.
Well, Bill, you know, all the times we've spoken in the past about your work with Admiral Riccobana during the war, now we understand how you got involved with it and why you were chosen to work with him. That's now
yes.
That was a crucial piece of the puzzle that I don't think I ever successfully put into the equation, but it's there. Now it works. Just a couple of months later, that's why you were taken literally as a raw recruit and elevated to the most secretive position in naval intelligence that you could be in. Fascinating.
Yeah, and this is not an accident. This was planned.
Got it.
Now, obviously, they put a lot of stuff in my head,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And way before going to work at Douglas in the secret think tank in the 50s, like 51, 52.
Yeah.
This is way back at 42, okay?
Right.
So what I'm trying to say is the stuff that they put in my head to do Admiral Riccobana's operation was initiated in that bright light that came in over our apartment in that great big house.
Wow. I understand. Yeah. Got it. Well, now we know how it happened. Now we know the reason. Okay.
Yes. But what I'm trying to say, Jeff, is that thousands of other people got triggered too. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All over Southern California. And you have to admit, it doesn't make any difference where you live in the United States. L.A., San Diego is a heavy naval situation.
Sure.
It's massive.
Sure.
And so many other people got the same shot. Okay? And this is how we so quickly went into this program being able to study the extraterrestrial events in Germany and then get on board and essentially seed the American top technical organizations into extraterrestrial. Wow. I mean, this is a major event.
Indeed. Indeed.
And in two chapters of my book, Selected by Extraterrestrials, I get into that. And it's an amazing situation that Admiral Riccobana was selected. I don't mean to try to repeat stuff here, but he was selected to handle these Navy operatives, bring this information back, put together packages, and disseminate it throughout the United States at the highest technical level in the country. Now, why shouldn't any one of the 37 Navy admirals have been given that information? The reason the Secretary of the Navy Forrestal did not give it to any of those admirals is because every one of them, almost everyone, went through an Atlas and got taught the wrong thing. They got taught lies.
Mm-hmm.
We don't seem to accept or understand the magnitude that the planet has been under for so many thousands of years, under reptilian control. Wow, this is no joke. And we've been lied to from the start. And because Riccobana wasn't even an American citizen. He didn't go to school here.
Right.
Well, he went to high school, but he never went to the university. He never got taught the incorrect information.
Mm-hmm.
So when he was selected to head up the most complicated, most advanced technical effort ever in the history of this recent world, a man who had not been educated in the books about the lies was selected. Wow. This is unreal. And I hate to keep saying bringing this up, but you got to back off and realize what's taking place. We have been lied to on this planet by reptilian extraterrestrials for thousands of years, at least 6,000. And we're still being lied to.
Oh, absolutely. I have an email here. Go ahead. Go ahead, Bill.
No, go ahead.
I got an email for you. Somebody wrote in and said, Jeff, when you get a chance, please ask Bill how we might be able to stop the Draco reptilians from messing with our minds.
Boy, you got a $64 question. I don't know who wrote that. He's got a good question. But the key of that is to get out from under mind control. And there again, at TRW, you have all these thousands and thousands of top technical people in different laboratories all over the campus, okay? 5,000 of them in the most advanced think tank on the planet. And these people come to the conclusion in all our medical studies that there's only 2.3% of our brains being used, that we have a fantastic brain that has unbelievable capabilities, just like Nordics. They look like us. They're our cousins, okay? But we're only allowed to use 2.3% because we're smoking reptilian pot. And you say, Bill, that's insane. I don't believe that. I'm sorry. TRW came to that conclusion in 5 separate laboratory studies independent. Now, the thing is, as we can get the use of more of our brain,
mm-hmm.
there's unlimited things we can accomplish. I'm going to use an example that came out of TRW. Essentially, you wake up in the morning, you eat breakfast, you get dressed, and you head to work. So the thing you use to get to work in this case is an automobile. All right? Did you know your brain has the capability to think of an automobile? And you can make it. All the facilities, all the material, all the engineering requirements are all supplied. And you thought that you wanted that vehicle, and you can make it.
Hmm.
Now you say, Bill, I don't believe that either. Okay. We're getting real smart now. We really are. And our capabilities are just unbelievable. They're staggering what we can do. And this situation, which is in the last 3 chapters of Michael Salas' new book,
right?
Where you know what we're going to talk about, and I don't know whether I should get into it now, but that's true, and that's coming. Unbelievable.
It is. If we, you know, here's the deal: 2.3% of our brain, unfortunately. And everyone listening knows that we're on top of this story. The average intellectual competency level of the average younger American coming through the supposed education system is in decline. It's diminishing. It's not expanding. It's not going to be allowed to expand through the governmental agencies and the agenda that we're being administered with. It won't be allowed to happen. So some other higher authority is going to have to allow our brains to escape the Skinner boxes that we've been put in. Now, there are exceptions to this, of course, but you look at the so-called millennials and now the snowflakes, and you scratch your head and you say, my God, How dumb can these people get? And now you look over your shoulder and you say, and here comes what? Thanks to Google, primarily, and others, Rutgers, MIT, here comes artificial intelligence, which theoretically could surpass the average dumbed-down younger American in the next 10, 15 years. Maybe it already can. We don't know. But we're headed toward a real conflict here between human intelligence and artificial intelligence. And that's perhaps a topic for another program, but there's a real problem coming here, Bill, real soon. Because the dumber they make us, and they are engineering us to be dumb, they being our controllers, whoever they may be, we are in real trouble. And that 2.3% will shrink to 2.1.9% if something isn't done to reverse it. And I concur with you.
There's a lot of unbelievable situations that we're in, and we have to step back and say, okay, maybe it's possible that what Jeff's saying and maybe what Bill is saying over there, maybe some of this could be real. And it turns out that like 98% of it is real, and we have to get ourselves into a total different schooling
Right.
agenda.
We have to break away, Bill, from our controllers, or we will be forever destined to be their chattel. And no more. That's all we'll be.
And there's people that talk about this planet as just a standard prison.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to say that I'm in a prison. Well, unfortunately, everybody on this planet is in their prison. And we need to fix that.
We got
to
fix it.
We need to understand what's really going on.
We're destroying our home. We're destroying our planet, Bill. It won't be here. Look at Fukushima, for God's sakes. The damage it's done to the Pacific Ocean and the Northern Hemisphere. We have 450, give or take, reactors around the world. 103 in the United States. They're beyond their useful life, if they ever had a useful life at all, which I would dispute they ever did. I don't believe it. We never should have broken the atom. It didn't do anything for this planet except put us on a one-way road to our own destruction. That's all it did.
Destruction. That's all it did. You're right. And we have to fix these things. One at a time, start fixing them. And I think that's what your whole program is all about, Jeff, is trying to get people to realize what's happened and methods to start fixing it.
Exactly. Well, we do that here. Exactly. For 24 years, I've been doing that, trying to help people understand what has been done and what is being done to them to deprive them of their God-given rights to exercise the fullest amount of their intellectual potential to make this planet what it could be. But so far, I'm seeing results that aren't encouraging. It's very unfortunate. To put it mildly, it's a tragedy. And whoever's influencing our controllers, the Draco reptilians, whoever they are, they've got to go. The Nordics have got to give us the tools, the keys, the inspiration, the guidance, the divine wisdom to reject this kind of control and allow ourselves to prosper and to become what we should be, the sentient species, the caretaker of this beautiful planet. But when you look over your shoulder, Bill, what do you see? You see the most evil, depraved, rotten control machine trying now, after it has destroyed Europe. Destroyed Europe! Think about that in 5 years. And they want to do the same to us. If we allow this, and it's called a clash of cultures and civilizations, and I mean the Muslims, Islam will not work in the Western world. Ever. Ever. It will destroy it. And we are inviting these people in here? This has got to stop. That's step one, and I mean it. This is our final reckoning.
Well, if when the Muslim talks to me and tells me why it is that I have to become a Muslim...
Or die.
He really means that. Because he is required to take me out.
Correct.
And I don't think people realize what we just said.
No, they don't. They've been lied to. You're totally right, Bill.
What did you say? They have to convert me to them, or they're going to kill me. They're going to murder me. And we're bringing them in because people don't want to build a wall. This is insanity.
Indeed,
it
is.
We have to do more than just build a wall.
Oh, much more. Yes. And what has happened to Donald Trump is so amazingly bizarre. I'm really leaning now toward the idea that he is being mind controlled. Nobody changes that much in that short a period of time, unless there's something going on. And they do have psychotronic mind control. It is very well advanced. And they could do that to Donald Trump easily. And I'm suggesting, don't put that off the table. Keep it on the table as a potential to explain the outrageous betrayal that we are being exposed to continually by this man we put so much faith in. Anyway, all right, now I have a request. Frank writes and tells me that there's something I should ask you. Jeff, would you ask Bill to recount his ability to leave the planet at the tender age of 5? We're talking about bilocation here. He said it's a very powerful story. I don't know if you want to share that. We'd love to hear it.
Well, there's a price for it. Come on. It's going to cost you $10, okay?
All right. We'll get it to you as soon as possible. We'll do it with PayPal, yeah.
Really, though, it's kind of interesting because I do talk to many people, and I hear their stories, and I guess I haven't heard this particular approach. But essentially, my dad was into developing film for the movie industry.
Your father was a giant in the early days of the motion picture industry, and you promised we're going to do a program just about early Hollywood, your dad, and the life you led as a child. So don't forget that.
Yeah, all right. But what I'm trying to say is we lived in Hollywood, and after he lost all his money, he was blackballed.
And you folks, ladies and gentlemen, you can figure out who blackballed Bill's father to get him out of the industry so they could take over his marvelous achievements. And go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, wild. Yeah. We're living in very small apartments. We never paid any rent for I don't know how many years, because what we did is we had no furniture. We had to rent a furnished apartment, and we would not put the down payment on, and we didn't pay rent. So we had to move every 2 to 3 months.
Oh,
and this is the reason that it took the Navy intelligence almost 3 months to get my background, to get security clearance, high security clearance in the Navy, because we had hundreds of places we moved to through the Depression. And so we didn't have any money. And so we never did pay rent because we just kept moving. Okay, in that atmosphere, my brother and I would usually have a small apartment that we would share. Both in the daytime, but more in the evening, I used to fly. And I flew without an airplane, okay? And don't come down on me right now. Give me a chance to talk.
I would never come down on you, Mr. Tompkins.
Okay. Okay. So what I would do is, and I didn't necessarily have remote viewing. That came along much later.
Uh-huh.
So I never had a specific target that you have to have in remote viewing to move on. So this is different. I would be doing homework or building models or whatever in that little room. And at night, I would be sleeping and I would wake up. So it's one or the others, both daytime and night. And I simply flew up 100 feet above the house. And in the summertime, I just had a short sleeve shirt on. I had shorts on, and I did have my shoes and socks. Okay. But I would fly up to 100, 200 feet, look around, and then head up to Hollywood, to Hollywood Boulevard. And I'd fly up to Hollywood Boulevard. Now I'm up about 400 feet. And I'd look at all the buildings and the Grauman's Chinese and everything else. And then I'd make a turn and go the opposite direction. I'd fly out over Santa Monica. And I'd go up and down the beach. I'd fly all the way to San Pedro. I'd fly up to Santa Barbara. And I could fly fast. I mean, I could really fly fast. Okay? And almost every single time that I flew, I would, after fooling around here, looking at all the streets, the cars driving and the ships coming into harbor and all that stuff, planes taking off from the airports, I then went straight up. I went right out into the galaxy. And I would fly millions of miles out in the galaxy. And it wasn't cold. I was nice and warm. And it's supposed to be real cold, but it never bothered. And in 2 seconds, I'm home. I'm fooling around with the ship models. I'm reading some stuff that I got at the library about different ships and everything. And I'm sitting down in that little bedroom again.
Uh-huh.
So you say, okay, that's a nice story. I'm not going to believe that one either. Okay? But this actually happened. And I don't know who put that into my head, but I flew almost every week from the time I was like 8 years old till it slowed down when I got into my teens. And it almost quit by, I would say, 30 or 35.
Mm-hmm.
I quit flying. Now, this gave me a different picture of the planet, because I could look back at the planet when I'm out there flying, and I saw things that you now see from, say, a space shuttle flying back from the space station to Earth. I saw all that stuff back then, way before space shuttle even existed. I saw different extraterrestrial vehicles out there. I went to other planets. I went to other star systems where the entire city floated. And I went aboard Nordic spacecraft carriers. I found friends on board, different men that I knew that would be there. And even the commander, like the captain of a 6-kilometer-long spacecraft carrier, Nordic spacecraft carrier, I would actually fly into the vehicle, and I could see, hear, and smell the coffee. I could see all the different people talking. Now, later on, I remote viewed. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people don't understand remote viewing. And it's a similar kind of thing, but what you do is you set a specific target that you want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you set your mind on that target, and you don't just wave your arms. You go there. You don't have to wave your arms or get some sort of a... you have to go through some sort of a drill to say this, 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 and this, and then it works. No, I just go, okay? I get the target, and I go. So when I'm older, remote viewing, I get the target to go to that same spacecraft carrier and talk to those same people.
Huh.
And I did this too. Okay? Not just flying, but I physically go there and, well, my body's back here. So I go there and I can talk to the same people that I went to when I was 9 years old. Wow. So now I'm remote viewing like I'm supposed to do in space engineering. I went to the same floating cities.
Huh.
I went to the same locations where there were millions of futuristic buildings floating, okay? And where spaceships, 40 and 50 kilometer long commercial ships, as well as military ships, come into docks floating. Nobody's ever even made a drawing of that. I've never seen a movie of that. This is insane. But I did this either just flying or remote viewing, which I still do today. And you say, okay, now you're a remote viewer. Okay, mine, again, I guess there's probably 15 or 20 ways to remote view. And so mine is really simple. All I have to do is set a target, and I'm there. There's no flight out into the galaxy for 20 minutes or whatever to get I'm there, okay? And I'm trying to describe the stuff that Bill Tompkins does, because he's obviously not with all the thing he ought to use is between his ears, okay? But this is what I do. And so in working with top Navy space people, both in the Navy and in the secret tank at Douglas, and like TRW Space Systems, which is nothing but advanced space, medical-wise, they have all the standard remote viewing capabilities. And it's common now. It's not an unusual thing. And almost anybody can remote view. But it's, from a military standpoint, it's really cool because, like, during the TRW years, I remote viewed to Russia, and I spent time above the Vladivostok naval facility in Russia, which is the largest Russian Navy facility. And I'm like at 500 feet looking down at the whole thing. And I fly all around it. And so now I want to go see the boss, okay? So I fly down, and I go into this big building, and which is then Admiral Sergei Gorshkov's command center. And I am in the corner of his conference room. It's a massive conference room, maybe 20 or 30 people all talking. I can see and hear everything that they're saying. I can smell the coffee. They're talking in Russian. All of it comes to me in English. Hey, that's cool. I've gone to Germany, and it comes in to me. They're talking German. I get it in English. Wow. Hey, that's cool. So if you get into naval intelligence and you use remote viewing, boy, you can get a lot of stuff. And this is a big deal today in secret military programs. But I, for instance, I saw Sergei Gorshkov. I could hear everything the guy's saying. He's talking about programs that they're developing with, well, I forgot to tell you, before I went to his office, I went over the Vladivostok Naval Base, where they had these four great big dry docks, and they were building shapes, ships, cruisers, destroyers, aircraft carriers, no battle battleships, and they all had curved, angled hulls. They didn't go straight up the side. It angled out, then it went down. The bridge is all cut at different angles. And then later on, of course, we found that the Russians were doing stealth. But we didn't know what it was. So I bring this back to the Navy, and I'm telling them what these guys are doing. Okay, they had photographs of these dry docks from high altitude, and they could barely see these ships. I saw the ships in the dry docks, and then I could make a drawing of it. And I didn't have a camera with me. I never carried a camera when I fly. But I'm only saying, so if you want to have me be a Navy spy in Russia, you know, I could do that. I never did that, but I had the capability of doing it.
Well, you could
so
have,
now
you,
everything you, that I'm saying sounds blue sky again. But all I'm trying to say is, we have unbelievable capabilities, and we're not using them.
Right.
And remote viewing is a fantastic intelligence tool that everybody's using today. Way back then, nobody even knew it that it existed.
Right.
But just looking at the ships which the Russians were building, that we in the Navy here didn't know what they were coming out with. And I bring this information back from just a flight, a remote view, viewing flight, and then other people in the naval intelligence. So they started a remote view, and they got in there. And they verified all this stuff that I'm talking about. And I'm just saying, this is kind of a cool system. It's another capability that we didn't know we had, remote viewing. For the audience, look it up on the computer. It's really interesting. And virtually anybody can remote view. There's all different methods. I got to say, it's got to be the simplest and the easiest.
Oh, yeah. You just,
all I do is set the target.
Right. That's amazing. I've done programs on remote viewing for well over 20 years. And what you're describing is the way it ought to be done by everybody. You just do it. No rituals, no training required. You do it. But this goes back to the beam and perhaps to things that happened to you even before that, which we have yet to talk about. Now, I do want to get into one other thing during our time remaining. And we have the fourth item under Bill's name is a link to, it's a PDF, to the Integrated Space Plan, the preliminary version from February 1989. Now, that's in a PDF. It's a Rockwell International. It's a color drawing, and it is incredibly complex. And you want to tell us about that, Bill. What is it?
Okay. I don't know whether you have a chance to put that up on the...
People can see it right now. Anybody can load it and look at it, yes.
All right. Everybody's looking at it. Okay. Now, I have to back off to where did this come from, okay? Now, again, inside the secret think tank, we had requirements for contracts to, like, design a intermediate range ballistic missile, which we did design and build, and we deployed all over Europe, and that's what when the wall came down, okay?
Right.
So we did design that. We put it in production. They went over there. So that's where... You do a lot of engineering, and this is kind of hard to describe, but the standard method is to put together all of the requirements that are going to have to be done to develop, engineer, design, and develop, say, a ballistic missile. So what you do is you start with a big blank piece of paper, and you start listing everything, and you type in all this stuff into what's sort of like a folder, a preliminary design folder. And then you add illustrations to that document. It might be 200 pages, and it's a sort of a rough draft of a first cut of how you're going to design this missile system. So then it gets to the point that this was then a contract from the Air Force to Douglas, and they will send you a request for bid. And there's three types of these contracts. Most of them are request for bid, and it's in competition with other companies. So everybody then puts together a package, and they submit it, and somebody wins. All right. So the package then that gets put together, whether it's a selected bid or whether it's a situation where you do an unselected bid, where you know more about the military's mission than they do, which we did at Douglas and at TRW. We do the study in Douglas and TRW. And so what you start with is this rough draft, some pictures, and then boxes of some of the information. So What happened to me in the secret think tank in Douglas in the 50s, I changed it, and I started with a rectangular box to start the program. Mm-hmm. Then I made a line across a piece of paper, and I split it because there's two things we have to do, so I made two more blocks. The center line went on down, and then there's blocks off the others. So you would do this vertically. Mm-hmm. So you fix all this stuff that you have to do vertically, and you end up with these little boxes. So I changed that from a vertical to a horizontal. And I ended up with a piece of paper, rolled out paper, that's 18, 20 foot long and a foot wide. I start with a block on the left, And I work to the right. And I break this up into four basic areas to develop the missile. Concept phase, definition phase, acquisition phase, and operational phase. These are everything in these four blocks that We have to do to make a successful weapon.
It's a roadmap, right?
It's a roadmap. All right. So now I get fired at Douglas because I went to NASA and we redid the Apollo, and company didn't like me talking to them. So I get fired and I go over to North American Aviation, right at LAX Airport. Actually, my secretary arranged that for me. She had me call Dr. Debus, and he set me up with a corporate engineering job at North American. So
your Nordic secretary had you call Dr. Debus to set the job up.
Yeah.
This was all integrated at the top. Wow.
Yeah, and so I get fired on Friday, and I go to work 1 week later on a Monday with a salary double what I had at Douglas.
Okay?
Because now I'm corporate engineering. Okay, so what do? I take as much of my stuff with me as I can. All right? And so I take my block diagram rollout thing, which became, the company presented this system to both the Air Force and the Navy. And the Navy didn't pick up on it, okay? And the Air Force saw this thing, they loved it, and they get Congress to establish that every military program, development program in the country, would have to use their new Air Force 375 Systems Engineering Systems Management Program.
Wow. And that's what we're looking at here, right? The Integrated Space Plan?
What you're looking at is a different thing. Now, I told you in my book, I forget what chapter, one of the earlier chapters, where we were at Douglas, and we were putting together the military-type programs, particularly Navy. Navy space, okay? But I said in that chapter that we also were putting together the requirements for commercial operations using all of our capabilities out in the galaxy to form corporations out there to develop different things that we could develop with and implement, like mining of not just gold, but all the other materials, and then selling it to other stars, planet systems. That's in my book, Selected by Extraterrestrial. So what did we obviously do when I got to North America? Yeah, I did all other stuff on Apollo, and because they had the second stage of Apollo, we came up with hundreds of proposals, okay, using their vehicle. Uh-huh. But I had brought what was then the Air Force 375 systems management stuff over to North America. Now, we put together 9 different commercial programs that we wanted to have North America go out into the galaxy and implement. Okay? One of these, obviously, first ones was mining. So we wanted to mine materials on the moon, and we wanted to mine materials that were in asteroids, which are floating out. There's billions of asteroids out in our local area around the sun. It's from a planet that blew up eons ago. That was another war problem. Okay, so some of these are half the size of the moon. So, gee whiz, these are big facilities, and they must have all kinds of minerals, okay? So, North American, then, the Apollo gets to the moon. The guys on the moon tell us, go ahead and finish 3 or 4 of your missions and get the hell off of the moon. So, the 40,000 people working on the Apollo program to do all this other stuff out there stopped, and they got laid off. I didn't get laid off from North America, but everything was gone now, the big business. So I formed a business myself up in Northern California for a while. Anyway, what did North America do? They changed their name, and they became Rockwell International. And the document looking at, actually, this was a preliminary, 11th February 1989, now almost 2000 here. And this is a preliminary.
Right.
So these guys do something even beyond what I was doing. They put their different blocks, and you would read it from left to right, and you read it from top to bottom. And they put this information in 8 separate vellums, okay? And you have 8 different levels of information on 8 clear vellums. And then you stack them all together, and you run a copy of it. And that's what you're looking at right now.
So this is
systems engineering, systems management for commercial work out in the galaxy.
Now this is your format. This is your creation. Although Rockwell put this one together.
Yeah.
This is
baby. Even one of the fellows is from McDonnell Douglas to assist them. And so this is a cool document, which you have to read the circles at least, because like extended directional orbits, permanent human presence in space, then you read strategic resources, It's actually, wow.
It is.
You have to read this thing.
It's a wow.
It's an unbelievable document that was put into my head by a Nordic blonde. So you're looking at a Nordic program.
Oh, and it expands all the way to the year 2100. Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You're looking at a Nordic document. Wow. Hey, they're helping us. Come on.
Well, you're helping us too, Bill. We're out of time. That was perfect timing on that. And I hope everyone will spend some time looking at this. An extraordinary formatting. And it comes from our Nordic friends through Bill.
Yeah.
Well, all right, my friend. Thank you for the visit, as always. I look forward to the next one. Great stories about the Battle of Los Angeles. We've got videos up there for all of you listening to look at anytime you'd like. Do so, and keep in mind, I want to do that Hollywood program when you're ready.
Okay, and we also have to do Freemasons, okay?
Oh, absolutely. Looking forward to it. I'll schedule the time as soon as you say.
Okay, we got to do it.
Okay, Bill. Thanks.
We got to do Hollywood first, right?
Yeah, right. I'd like that.
Have a good night.
Take care. All right. There he goes, the most unusual man ever to grace this program. His mind is extraordinary. We will be back soon. In fact, we'll be back tomorrow night. So take good care, and we will talk in 21 hours.